This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks in Manchester, New Hampshire.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty in Boston.
New Hampshire has held the first in the nation primary for so long that it can seem as permanent a part of America's political landscape as, say, the old man of the mountain was to the White Mountains.
Except, of course, that the old man collapsed in 2003, which proved to us that nothing is forever. And same goes for the New Hampshire primary itself. It wasn't always first. And I know that to say this today is a complete heresy, but why should it be? I mean, is this really the best way to get the ball rolling when it comes to picking a president?
So we're going to take a look at the pitfalls of the primary season and consider some alternative ideas about how to pick presidential candidates. But first, WBUR's David Boeri has this report on the haphazard history of the New Hampshire primary.
It's preposterous, of course, to think that New Hampshire, the first in the nation, is actually representative of the nation. As preposterous as thinking that Made in New Hampshire Moxie is the national soda. And it's not even what it used to be either. But if you don't look too closely at the thing, it's still a great show.
Everyone is in there pitching in an endeavor to gauge the mood of the American people.
Invented in 1913, the primary had little bearing on the nation until it went to direct voting in 1952, when this newsreel set the mold of the thing.
The citizens of the Granite State are not easily won.
In fact, they set a pattern by rejecting the sitting president, Harry Truman, in favor of Tennessee Senator Estes Kefauver, who wore a coonskin cap while riding a snowmobile. In reaction, Truman decided not to seek re-election.
What we start here in New Hampshire today, I believe, must succeed next summer and next November.
John Kennedy may have been the first, but he wasn't the last to suggest New Hampshire was the birthplace for saviors. The first campaign to call itself a crusade began here in 1968.
We raised the issue of the war and...
said Senator Gene McCarthy about Vietnam. The anti-war poet declared, "There comes a time when an honorable man simply has to raise the flag." And New Hampshire saluted.
Dover, McCarthy 47, Johnson 44. McCarthy 205, Johnson 197.
President Johnson won New Hampshire, but in another phenomenon that became a tradition here. In winning, he became the loser because he failed to meet the expectations of a big victory. Johnson's initial response was right on target.
You know, the New Hampshire primaries are unique in politics. They're the only races where anybody can run, and everybody can win.
But soon enough, Johnson announced he wouldn't seek re-election, and the New Hampshire primary was legend.
And the legend continues on to today, of course, and that was just a taste of WBUR's David Boeri's piece. You can hear the whole thing, and it's definitely worth it, at radioboston.org. But listeners, I do actually think we heard just enough to ask the following questions. Is the primary system the best way to pick a presidential nominee? Or is it anachronistic, intransigent, and in denial of the true makeup of the modern American electorate? How would you remake the nomination system? I mean, we could go back to convention delegates and backroom dealing, or maybe forward to a national primary or rotating regional primaries. Call us with your ideas at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Well, joining me now in the studio here in Boston is Bill Mayer. He's an associate professor of political science at Northeastern University. He's written extensively on elections and primaries, including the book The Front-Loading Problem in Presidential Nominations. Professor Mayer, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, let's just pick up where David's story left off and some efforts to reform the primary system going back to the 1970s. I mean, it seems like it's been the same for so long, but there have been continuous efforts to tweak it a little. What are your favorite highlights from things that happened in the 70s?
Well, the you were sort of indicating the rules of the process were substantially rewritten in the wake of the 1968 Democratic Convention, which Hubert Humphrey managed to win the nomination in spite of not having entered a single primary. And so the Democrats reformed the process. And the truth is that ever since then, The process has really been quite controversial, and it has been attacked on lots of different counts, one of them being that it gives too much power to two very unrepresentative states like Iowa and New Hampshire. But there are a long list of other criticisms as well.
Let's go through some of them just briefly. The other criticisms being what? That because everyone wants to be first now, as of 2012, well, especially in 2008, we saw a lot of primaries being rushed to the front of the calendar.
Well, that is part of a broader concern that the process is not sufficiently deliberative, which is to say what it ought to give us is some chance to a lot of people don't really start following the process until Iowa and New Hampshire start voting. And the worry is that the electorate will kind of rally around somebody in roughly the same way that it rallied earlier around Michelle Bachmann and then Herman Cain and Rick Perry, and have second thoughts only after that person has wrapped up the nomination. In the book that you describe on front loading, that's our big concern, is that it might not be sufficiently deliberative. It might force a decision too quickly.
Well, you hear this language amongst the campaigns themselves. They want what they're calling momentum, which carries them from state to state. Now, but what would be the pitfalls, say, of stretching out the calendar from January all the way till June or July before the summer convention?
Well, we do have technically the calendar does stretch from January through June. The problem is that it typically is over much earlier than that. The 2008 Democratic nomination race went all the way to June, and all of those primaries mattered. But other than that, every nomination race since 1996, some candidate has clinched a mathematical majority of the delegates by March.
By Super Tuesday, essentially.
Well, usually mid to late March, usually a little after Super Tuesday. And the result is that somewhere between a third and 40% of the states go to the polls after the race has already been decided. And, of course, that only means that the next time around they want to move further up so that they get at least some say in the process.
Okay, so correct me if I don't have my my electoral knowledge perfectly accurate here, but if a candidate has clinched enough delegates to be the nominee, the delegates are apportioned based on the number of
roughly speaking, in proportion to population.
Well, so in that case, don't we have then a proportional number of the populations already having voted to give enough delegates to the person who is the nominee?
Typically when somebody clinches, you've had about 60% of the states or so go to the polls. So we've had more than a majority, obviously. But there's still quite a number of states another thing that happens is even though a candidate doesn't clinch mathematically, essentially all of his major opponents drop out and the final primaries become little more than an empty ritual.
Okay, well, I want to ask two more questions before there's another very interesting voice I want to introduce in this conversation. But another criticism of the primaries is that the way that they're set up, and now more than ever, it favors the candidate who has the most money, the system overall. I mean, especially with this front-loading problem, that if you have a lot of money, you can have a ground game that covers a number of states, the important ones that are early. Do you share that concern?
Yeah, I think it's clear that now it is difficult for me to envision any kind of process that doesn't give at least some advantage to candidates who have a little more money. But again, if we could spread out the process and it's easy to say, very difficult to think about how you'd actually do it unless you wanted to have some central authority that said to states, you have to go here and you have to go the next week. That aside, to return to your question, I think it's very clear that the current system does advantage candidates who have a lot of money. And that's another problem with front loading, is that you don't have enough of an opportunity to build on early good showings.
And I can't imagine any central authority being seen as constitutional by the states, given the fact that states are supposed to run their own elections.
Well, there's a couple of possibilities. I mean, there are people who believe that the federal government has the capacity to pass a national primary bill. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of these that have been introduced over the years. I happen to think they're unconstitutional, but there are lots of people, particularly on the left side of the political spectrum, who think it would be constitutional.
The efforts are there. We'll talk about it more in a minute, but the efforts are there, but so far they've been unsuccessful.
Right. Now, the other possibility is that you could maybe get the national parties to do it. The national parties do have one club, if you will, that they hold over the states, and that is if a state selects its delegates in a way that the national party disapproves of, they can threaten not to seat them at the national convention.
Mm. I would like to ask you a question about something that's specific to this year, and that is the delegates themselves. I mean, since the 1970s, 1972 or so, I believe, the Democratic Party has said delegates must be proportional. So it's not winner-take-all anymore. More in the primaries on the Democratic side. As of this year, same thing on the Republican side.
Well, at least for part of the season.
At least for part of the season. But it hadn't been thus before until
yes.
this year. So I'm wondering, do you see that as an overall improvement that, you know, rather than states falling very quickly, that you might actually have some sort of, you might have candidates who don't do so strongly at the beginning be able to hang on because they are slowly accruing delegates?
Well, I think it was designed by the Republican Party precisely to slow down the process. And the idea is if you can't win delegates on a winner-take-all basis, you win them on a proportional basis, you accumulate delegates, as you say, much more slowly. And maybe instead of having the race end wrap up in mid-March, you have it go on into April or May. It's not clear how well that works because Democrats have frequently managed to wrap up the nomination in mid-March. Kerry did it in 2004. Al Gore did it in 2000. Mm. And so even with proportional representation and a front-loaded process, you can wrap up the nomination relatively early, but it'll slow it down a bit.
Well, we are talking about the primary system as a whole and whether or not it's the best way to pick a presidential nominee. What do you think of the idea of a national primary? And do you have, say, an idea to improve the system overall? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. Bill Mayer is my guest. He's an associate professor of political science at Northeastern University. And joining us now from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, is David Price. He's a Democratic congressman from North Carolina's 4th District. And before that, he taught political science at Duke University until 1987. Congressman Price, welcome to Radio Boston.
Good afternoon.
And I note that North Carolina has to wait until May 8th for its primary. But let me ask you, you've been quite vocal in the fact that you think that the system overall needs some reform, and you've even gone so far as proposing a brand new system of 5 primary contests each Tuesday for several months and saying that something like that would be ideal. What do you tell us a little bit more about this idea?
Actually, I haven't come down firmly on behalf of such a proposal, although I must say that the frustrations that Bill is describing and some that he didn't describe, like the leapfrogging of each other by states wanting to be first and wanting to have their place in the sun, those frustrations and difficulties have led to alternative proposals such as a more definitive structuring of the sequence of primaries. I think a national primary is a terrible idea. It's just a formula for even more big money and big media influence. I think the sequencing of the process where the states go in some kind of order and there's some potential for candidacies to rise and fall, some potential for correction in the process. I think that's important. But I don't think it's very, very good to have the degree of domination that New Hampshire and Iowa have right now. We tried to mitigate by the way, by adding on the Democratic side to Nevada and South Carolina to the mix, and I think that did mitigate it somewhat. Republicans have done the same thing.
Mr. Price, if I may, you have served as co-chair of the DNC's Commission on Presidential Nomination Timing and Scheduling, so you've tried to, as you said, at least get the Democratic side of things to change, but why do you think that these early states have really been able to maintain their hold on the primary system?
Well, first of all, they're very, very determined. I mean, I've never seen anything like the determination that Iowa and New Hampshire bring to this process, and they have various ways of getting allies. And, of course, the candidates themselves are kind of conflicted because they don't want to do anything. They can't assume that the situation is going to be changed, so they can't do anything to alienate voters in Iowa and New Hampshire. So the candidates themselves have been kind of uncertain trumpets here in advocating for change.
What would you make of something that was proposed, as you know, back in 2008, and that is a regional, rotating regional primary? Massachusetts signed on to this plan where, I guess, every year a region of the United States would go first rather than a particular state.
Well, I think that's interesting as a way of structuring the process. The other major idea that Republicans almost adopted is the so-called Delaware plan, where there are is a clustering of states, with the small states going first, but not exclusively New Hampshire and Iowa, but a clustering of small and large states successively through the season. That's another idea that I think has some promise. It is worth noting, though, and Bill is the main national expert on this front-loading trend within the regular calendar. To some extent, that has that's less pronounced this year.
Mm-hmm. And I agree.
It's interesting to speculate why. Both parties have tried to disincentivize front loading. The Democrats give bonus delegates to states that go late.
That wait,
The Republicans give winner take all privileges to states that go late. But I think a couple of things are really much more important than that in mitigating this front loading trend. The first is that in 2008. The rewards came to the states who waited. That was a lesson that I think was learned by a number of states. North Carolina, we had a sweet revenge because everybody was saying we'd written ourselves out of the process, and weren't we stupid to wait until early May? And lo and behold, North Carolina turned out to be the decisive state.
Congressman Price, if you could just hang on for a moment, I do want to bring in Professor Mayer back into this conversation because I noticed that you wanted to jump in and say something.
Well, the only thing I wanted to say about that rotating regional primary system is it's important to say that at least the proposal that was put together by the National Association of Secretaries of State specifically exempted Iowa and New Hampshire from it.
That's true.
So Iowa would have gone first, then New Hampshire, and then you'd have had whatever region went first. Mm-hmm. And this gets again back to this problem of you can set up whatever system you want. Iowa and New Hampshire will always jump in and say, no, it shouldn't apply to us, or it doesn't apply to us, and we'll go first no matter what you say.
And then maybe Florida's going to leapfrog somebody.
Exactly. Once a couple of states do it, then it's very difficult to say to Florida, well, we've given special privileges to these states, but we won't give them to you.
You know, gentlemen, I hate to say this, but we are running down on time. So, Congressman Price, let me ask you. I mean, it seems as if incremental change has been a constant part of the primary process, but do you think it'd be possible to really sort of make a big, bold change that might take care of some of these concerns and inequities we've been discussing this segment?
Well, that's really what Bill's referring to, is a decisive effort at the national level, presumably by the Congress or by the two parties together to impose a much more rigid structure on this whole process. And I think there are constitutional issues about doing that, and there most certainly are political issues as to whether a plan like that would stick.
And I suppose now money becomes even more of an issue than ever as well. Professor Mayer, last thought goes to you. You do sound a little pessimistic that we could ever break the sort of Hawkeye Granite State hegemony here.
I certainly in the short term. I typically what happens in the presidential nomination process is we get a system and it endures for 50, 70 years, and then a big crisis occurs and we change the process. And until that crisis, and I'm not even sure what that is, occurs, I think we have the system we've got, and I think we should think really more about incremental changes like the ones the parties have tried to do over the last couple cycles.
Bill Mayer is an associate professor of political science at Northeastern University and author of The Front-Loading Problem in Presidential Nominations. Professor Mayer, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
David Price is a Democratic Patrick, congressman from North Carolina's 4th District and former co-chair of the DNC's Commission on Presidential Nomination, Timing, and Scheduling. Congressman Price, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you.
Listeners, continue this conversation, as always, on RadioBoston.org. Coming up after the break, we'll speak with the former head of the New Hampshire GOP, a Tea Party supporter, about what happened to the Tea Party. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty in Boston with Anthony Brooks in Manchester, New Hampshire. This is Radio Boston.